Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is Charlotte, and you're watching Going In Raw. That sounds terrible.
What's up? This is the most must-see WWE superstar of all time and his lovely, gorgeous wife,
Marie.
And you are Going In Raw.
What's up? It's your girl, Sasha Banks, the legit boss, and you are watching Going In Raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. And you are tuned in to Going In Raw right now. How you doing?
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw, the only pro wrestling podcast you need to be listening to right here at youtube.com/Steven Larson and anywhere fine podcasts are available, including the iOS podcast device app, whatever it's called. Anyways, be sure to hit the subscribe button. Make sure that you get your notifications from Steven Larson's Going In Raw.
Yes.
We're also at the Patreon at patreon.com/Steven Larson. If you want to contribute to the show, we have a plethora of wonderful reward tiers. So it's kind of like a subscription service. You give us money, we give you stuff.
Yes.
Or access to stuff.
Yes.
Anyways, we're also at prowrestlingtees.com/goinginraw. We have 10. Count them, 10.
10.
Wonderful designs right now. More to come.
Yes, very soon.
Couple on the horizon from our latest design guru and Larson.
Oh, that's me.
That's you, buddy. Anyways, we're not here to ramble on about ourselves,
are
we? No. What are we here to talk about, Larson?
205 Live and NXT, but also, oh, you already mentioned Pro Wrestling Tees. So, yeah, just that.
Well, all we really need to be talking about today is 205 Live, man, because, hoo boy, those post-takeover NXTs are brutal.
A little thin on content.
Yeah.
New content. They spent a lot of time recapping the previous takeover.
They spent almost all the time. Yeah. Although we did get the debut of Velveteen Dream.
Yeah, that's something worth talking about.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah, it's very rad.
I have one disappointment about that, though, and I'll get to that when we get to it.
Okay.
First up, we're going to talk about 205 Live. I thought this was and I think they've had a lot of strong episodes lately. This blow-off match between Tozawa and Kendrick was fantastic.
It was.
I thought the build during this episode with regards to this match and how it went down was fantastic. Fantastic.
I think it was.
This is one of the most strong episodes I've seen.
And the episode kicked off with a pretty lengthy recap of the Kendrick Tozawa feud that was kind of narrated by the Brian Kendrick.
Right, right.
And that was really effective, really good, really well done.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So it really set the stage for what would happen later in the evening.
Right. But to build to that, first up we had Rich Swann taking on Daivari. This is a fun enough match.
Yeah.
Of course, this follows up
last week when the delivery person showed up with a package for Rich Swann, and Rich Swann said, "I'm not Rich Swann, or this isn't for me."
Yeah.
It's for
that guy over there.
It was Daivari.
And after a bit of a back and forth with Jack Gallagher, Daivari ended up opening up the box, and he got the poof in his face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is a spectacular. So this was like, you know, the natural culmination of that is a match.
Yes.
And that's what this was. Another fun match. Rich Swann picked up the win with a Phoenix Splash after a spin kick. And then Noam Dar came out with Alicia Fox and attacked Rich Swann. And they went back to different replays during this so much. I thought, my prediction is still, they'll probably confine it to Raw. But my prediction was Sasha Banks was going to show up and attack him when they least expect it, like she said she was going to do.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a mixed tag match.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. They need to do something. It's interesting. During the I was reading the Wrestling Observer, and one thing he pointed out was, I think he said it was this past week, last week's maybe, 205 Live was like barely cracked the top 20. It came in after like old reruns of Table of Three, and like that has to be like they have to be sounding the alarm bells.
You would think so.
At that point.
You would think so.
That's not good.
No. Which is a bummer because 205 Live, especially the last 2 months, have been putting on a really good show every week.
This could easily be up there with NXT, consistently is in the top three. And that's even considering on pay-per-view weeks, it's usually like the top two or three.
Yeah.
On non-pay-per-view weeks, I'm pretty sure it's usually number one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a strong show. 205 Live is a strong show, but there are definite definite hindrances. We've talked about them ad nauseum here on the show. I won't go into them. After that, we had a pretty good Austin Aries Neville package.
Yeah, again, to kind of recap their feud, and that led to a joint interview hosted by Corey Graves between Austin Aries and Neville.
Now, 9 times out of 10, when they do one of these side-by-side interview things, they're trash.
Yeah, this was fantastic.
This was awesome. I can't say enough great things about Neville at this point. And that's saying, would you have thought in a million years, a year ago, if they said, hey, Neville and Austin Aries are going to be in a feud, Neville is going to out-mic Austin Aries by a distance. Would you believe that?
No.
Neither would have I. Not in a million years. And I'm not saying necessarily that he is that much more superior than Austin Aries on the mic. I don't. I think Austin Aries holds his own.
Oh yeah, I thought he was fantastic in this too.
He was great, but Neville is really next level because of that heel persona that he's developed.
Oh yeah.
And Austin Aries is a face. The face always gets the boring role, and he's doing everything he possibly can, and we love it.
Yes.
We love it.
Yes.
But Neville is up there, man. It's like I said this before. I said he'd be a great Game of Thrones character.
Yes.
He really would. He has the look. He's got the he's got the acting chops.
Mm-hmm.
He was great. And
there's that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to punctuate that again by saying, and it's simple. It's a lot of it is because he gets to be the heel and Austin Aries gets to be kind of the I don't want to say boring face, but he's the face. And usually,
There's less to work with.
There's less to work with.
Generally speaking.
But when you see these guys side by side, I'm just waiting for Neville to talk some more.
Yeah.
You know, and that's saying that that's admitting that Austin Aries is fantastic on the mic.
He is. There's that one moment where Austin Aries said something, insult to Neville, and Neville sits there for a moment. And at first I thought he'd forgotten this line.
Yeah, I know.
But no, he was absorbing it.
I know.
And so he sits there for a second and kind of does something like this. Stewing over it.
He stews. I was going to use that word. He stews. It's great.
And then he had a retort.
Because, like, you could see it building behind his eyes. Yep. And, yeah, at first you're like, wait, did he lose his train of thought? But, no, it was building. And then his retort comes out and it makes perfect sense. If that was a scene played out in a movie, then, like, you wouldn't have thought he forgot his line.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of, like, you don't see a lot of dramatic pauses.
Well, you generally don't see wrestlers in interviews given a chance to take beats like that.
Question answer,
you know.
Yeah, like there's something prepared for it. It was absolutely fantastic. I could seriously, this is a feud that I think can go on for ages and ages, and I'd never get bored.
No,
I
wouldn't either.
It is kind of funny though, like Austin Aries is so great as a heel. That's like the only thing, I think that's my only sort of gripe with, and it's not even a gripe, it's just we know what Austin Aries can do as a heel.
Yes.
And so we know that we're not getting his 110%. You know what I mean? Because you can't. I mean, you can't. There's not. It's the same thing with Seth Rollins. We know what he can do as a heel. Therefore, his face run, which is totally fine, like he's hitting the beats he's supposed to hit, it's underwhelming, I think, to everybody because we know what he can do as a heel.
Same thing with Samoa Joe. Because Samoa Joe, when he was in NXT at first, he was a face.
Yeah.
Until he turned on Finn Balor, and he was fine.
Yeah.
But when he's a heel,
yeah,
it's just so much better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, it was you never see these. I mean, these side-by-sides are always horrible. They're always terrible. This was fantastic.
Yeah. They did a great job of playing off each other, despite the fact that they were in different rooms.
Yeah.
And usually that's what's kind of lacking.
Yeah.
It just seems like the two participants are talking at each other instead of there's actual dialogue.
Remember when they did the, this is sort of different, but the Darren Young, Bob Backlund promos?
Yeah.
And they were just awkward. And it's like, man, could you imagine what these guys would be pretty good? Like, because they were actually fairly amusing, but you're just thinking to yourself, they're not in the same room. This is weird. And you just thought to yourself, I wish they were in the same room together. Then we had this was great. We had the return of Cedric Alexander.
Yeah.
Taking on some poor bastard named Johnny Boone, who I'm not even sure is a real wrestler. this guy, this was like, I'm trying to think about how to verbalize this. What did you think of this match?
It was short.
Johnny Boone seemed like he had been plucked from the crowd, like without his consent. And but because everything, all his reactions seemed A, legitimate, and B, like he didn't know what was happening. Like, I know you probably weren't, I don't know if you were paying attention. For some reason, I started paying attention to this guy. Because he looked, number one, he looked really young, but then he had super gray in his beard.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But every time he would get it, and Cedric looked like he had a heel face going.
A little bit.
He looked like he had heel face, like he was enjoying beating up on this poor Johnny Boone guy.
Yeah. No, especially when he walked out, Cedric had a little bit
they
of...
They still have that crap music of his.
Heel face, I know.
That's I don't like that theme song. It's so annoying. Cedric looked great.
Oh, yeah, he's
fantastic.
He
looked like $1 million, but he totally... I think that sort of added to the Johnny Boone comedy for me, is that Cedric looked like he wanted to hurt this guy.
Yeah.
He looked like he was having fun hurting this guy. And so it just made me think of every time that like a fan runs in and Triple H starts kicking me in the head as hard as he can. Anyways.
Cedric won with a lumbar check.
Yeah, lumbar check is one of those things. It looks like it's not the easiest thing for the guy receiving it
I know.
To pull off. And Johnny Boone looked like he did not know how to pull off the receiving end of this.
Yeah.
Because it looked like he sort of like, I don't know, just tumbled back down as
yeah,
opposed to.
Yeah, and then like the way he sold it like, I don't know, like a back body drop kind
he
of.
He sold it like it really hurt the crap out of him.
Well, I know, but like he sold it. Usually people, when they get hit by their finisher, they sell it like they're out.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
And he kind of lifted himself up and made a face selling it.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, that's my finish. Act like it hurt. Not just like it is an inconvenience. Johnny. You're not coming back, Johnny. Anyways, then we had a great little political ad-esque message from Drew Gulak, who was in a suit, had an American flag pin, had like a front yard behind him, I think,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, he was that. Obviously in front of a green screen.
Right, exactly. But it was a very political ad. I'm surprised they didn't do this message is brought to you
I know,
by type
I know.
Thing.
They did do the freeze frame at the end.
Yeah, that was awesome. This is smiling. Fantastic. And he was talking about how, you know, 205 Live should be about technical mat wrestling.
Yes,
stuff
not
like
high
that.
Flying, not high risk high, moves.
Exactly. I'm starting to come around to that just because it's Drew Gulak.
Oh, his first promo he did in this new character. Once he delivered, I was like, okay,
yeah,
this is good.
I'm all in on it.
All in.
I'm behind Drew Gulak right here. I hope they keep, and he did, he pointed out Mustafa Ali, so I want them to keep it because I like Mustafa Ali.
Yeah, Mustafa Ali's great.
Yeah, I think he's good for this feud. That led us to
the main event. Street fight, blow-off match,
this
it
was,
seems.
Yeah, well, the only reason, like, I would have maybe thought that it could have gone further. But at the very end, I think Corey Graves said something along the lines.
Oh, a couple times they did.
Okay, a couple
times.
This
is essentially the end of this
feud.
Yeah,
yeah. And it was, man, what a feud.
Yes.
And what a blow off.
Yes.
Like, fantastic. When you can get that crowd who's exhausted, tired, they've been through the, I believe they would have been through the Punjabi celebration. They've been through watching AJ Styles and Nakamura in the ring together. All that stuff. And all of the rest of 205 Live, then you get this match. They shouldn't have been this fever pitch, but they were hot.
Yeah.
By the end of this, they
were
hot.
Well, it's a testament to the quality of the feud and the time they've invested in building it up and building it up and building it up.
I say it every week in hopes that somebody at WWE might be paying attention. They need to get this in front of its own audience.
Yep.
Because this would have been... Dude, this could have been... Like, the level that they could have brought a fresh crowd up to would have had you thinking this was match of the year.
Yeah.
People would have been, it would have been like the Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne match.
Yeah.
It would have been like people have been talking.
Yes.
Like, oh, wow. Because this is fantastic. There's so much creativity in this match. You had Brian Kendrick using that purple ring rope tape.
Yeah.
To try to tie up, to cut off Tozawa's mouth breathing.
Yeah.
He, like, taped his mouth.
Well, it's not just that. But, I mean, when he first did, I thought it was to keep Tozawa from doing his, ha! Ah, to get the crowd into
okay,
it.
But
then the commentary team was like, oh, he's trying to keep, you know, Tozawa from breathing as well as he could.
Right, exactly.
And that's what Tozawa sold
his
afterwards.
Nose is okay. He wasn't trying to kill him.
Yeah.
But, you know, you need to breathe out through your mouth.
And Tozawa did a great job of selling.
Yeah, he did. He
that
did.
That whole spot.
He tried to, he was, at first looked like he was going for the hands, and then he didn't do that. And he said went for the mouth.
And
at
then
one
put
point,
him in a captain's hook.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. At one point, he used the tape to wrap him to bind him to the ring post thing.
And then took his belt off.
Yeah.
And started hitting Tozawa
oh,
with
great.
His belt.
That was great.
And then Kendrick went, I think, to adjust the table. Mm-hmm. And then Tozawa managed to free himself and grab the belt. And as soon as Kendrick turned around, Tozawa hit him, looked like right in the face.
Oh, I know. With the belt. I know. That was great. That was fantastic. And then we had the, like, the flipping spot of the night, man. I mean, of the week, of the month. I don't know what.
It was fantastic.
So they brought out a table because it's a street fight. You can do that.
And it was kind of sitting there for most of the match. So you knew it was going to be used.
That was going to happen. But I had no idea that it would happen the way it did. So Tozawa brings it, or it's over by the ring post. He puts Kendrick on it. He goes up to the very top, stands up.
On the ring post, the top of the ring post.
And lets out a couple of ha's, and then did a senton onto Kendrick. They both come crashing down.
And he got ridiculous height on that senton.
Yeah, I know. That dude, he got some height. And and so both of them came. It looked so devastating.
Yeah, it did.
And so then Tozawa rolls
Kendrick back in the ring.
The dead weight of Brian Kendrick back into the ring and got the 1-2-3.
Yep.
And, man, and the crowd was eating it up by the end. And that's what a match to be able to do that. That was fantastic.
It was great. And the both Tozawa and Kendrick, their intensity levels corresponded to a blow-off match.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was obvious.
This should have been
selling
the
end of their feud and selling it magnificently.
Extreme Rules is 2 weeks away. This could have been an Extreme Rules match easily,
especially considering, you know, there's five of Raw's top stars in one match.
Mm, yeah.
You know, yeah, exactly. I mean, they could potentially have three matches from 205 Live on the card at Extreme Rules.
Yeah.
They could have this one. They will have the submission match between Aries and Neville, and then they could have the mixed tag match with Sasha Banks and I would suppose Rich Swann against Alicia Fox and Noam Dar.
Yeah. If that is their plan to sort of start integrating a bit more of Raw stars to 205 Live, like integrating it more within, instead of just having, okay, we've got this going on, like a bit more integration there, that could start helping 205 Live, but the base, the root problem is still the same. It's the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Hell of an episode.
Yeah.
Another
strong episode of 205 Live. Hopefully the show starts getting some momentum in terms of viewership.
I hope so, man. It seems to be going the other way. But, man, I mean, if matches like that can't do the trick, then that's not the problem. Then that's not the issue. And you guys need to figure that out.
Yes.
Anyways. Let's
NXT.
Move on to NXT.
You know, there were three matches. We got Aleister Black. We got the debut of the Velveteen Dream, and we got a pretty decent match between Drew McIntyre and Wesley Blake.
Yeah, I know.
And then we got a couple little interviews.
Look, this is what
related
they have
to TakeOver.
Do. It's after TakeOver. They haven't done their latest round of tapings yet. It's totally fine.
Yeah,
but it is kind of a thing they need. If they're gonna, I'll put it this way: if they're gonna start doing more takeovers, they need to figure something else out.
Well, also if they want to start, you know, putting NXT on par with Raw and SmackDown, then they need to find a way to not have half an episode be recaps of TakeOver.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you're wasting one episode every... I mean, I don't know how often they plan on doing TakeOvers.
I think predominantly just quarterly.
Yeah.
Corresponding to the major four pay-per-views.
Was there a particular reason why this one existed?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm just speculating they just want to do one in Chicago.
Oh, okay, because they know
it's
a crowd.
Hot crowd, yeah.
Yeah. But it was a hell of a takeover, too.
Yeah, it was really good.
That's the thing. It's like, you know, but this is sort of a problem they kind of need to solve, you know?
Yeah. But I think this episode was kind of plagued by that more so than previous episodes. I mean, there's always...
Yeah, no, I know.
Like, post-takeover episodes of NXT are always heavy on recaps. Mm-hmm. This felt really heavy on recaps.
I mean, they had, within the first... I honestly want to say...
They had this first match, the Aleister Black versus Curt Hawkins match.
Each of these matches was like, okay, so Aleister Black versus Curt Hawkins.
5 minutes.
I was going to say seven, but yeah, 5 to 7.
Yeah.
Because they let Curt Hawkins get in some offense here.
Best spot where Curt Hawkins whipped Aleister Black into the ropes. Curt Hawkins ran after him and Aleister Black did the flip over him. Gosh.
I know.
Amazing.
I know. And you know what was really cool about this is that, look, I mean, here's the thing. When Aleister Black is fighting Performance Center guys like Keanu Reeves and Sean Maluta, it's one thing. Curt Hawkins is a main roster guy, so there should be he should have more of a fight.
Yes.
And that's fine. I like that because we got to see Aleister Black, I'm not going to say struggle at all, but we got to see him actually have to put some effort into it.
And we saw
as him, a character.
Yeah, and we saw him for the first time.
Frustrated, like, a little bit.
Well, I would say be really intense.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Because
before
yeah.
the finish, he actually, usually he's so detached.
He was getting kind of pissed.
Yeah.
That Kurt Hawkins taking this long to put down. I loved how the finish went down. There are a couple really decent spots here. Again, it was sort of like, you know, a bunch of stuff we hadn't seen from Aleister Black before. He needs to be careful with that jumping off the rope thing, though, because the rope didn't seem as taut as sometimes as usual. And man, you can really mess yourself up if you just think you can do that anytime and anywhere. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, that was really rad, though.
But Aleister wins with a black mass.
And the rad thing about it, too, is Kurt Hawkins was running at him when he took it.
Ran right into it.
And he dropped like a sack of potatoes. It was fantastic. Aleister Black, yeah, he picked up the win. He sat down as soon as the three was counted. And he just sort of looked off and looked kind of intense. He's got such a General Zod feel to him, man. That's what I sort of realized when I was watching him sit there. I don't know if I've said that before about him.
I don't think you have.
He definitely, to me, it's like it's General Zod now, which is all the great.
Yeah.
Because
you're
original General. Come on, original. As much as I love Michael Shannon.
It's Terrence Stamp.
Terrence Stamp is General Zod.
After this match is when we got a lot of recaps. We got a recap for
one thing I want to say about the Aleister Black thing. Somebody was off their game with the camera in his intro.
Yeah.
That was a mess.
Yeah.
Like he started tripping or something. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, I know.
But it was all over the place.
Anyways. We got there was an Ember Moon interview where she was sitting in the stands prior to takeover.
Stop doing that stuff, man. It doesn't come off as natural at all.
What, the staging or her performance?
Largely her dialogue. I'll say this. I think she does what she can with the dialogue. The dialogue is not good, which is kind of surprising. And if it's her, then I put it on her. If it's creative, then I put it on creative. Because the dialogue is just, it's, and honestly, like her delivery a little bit, it's too like theater group. It's too theater group for me. You got to be better than that. That's my take on it.
All right.
It's constructive criticism.
No, I understand that. I thought it was effective.
Yeah, I don't know. She's just I'm honestly surprised they didn't have the sad Charlie Brown music.
Well, that was
like they did before.
Well, that was a bit much the first time they did.
Oh man, yeah, I don't know. It was just it was a bit too much. I'm telling you, man. Make her put her with Dude Harper and Eric. That's what you do.
After that promo from Ember Moon, there was the recap for the women's title match.
Yeah.
Followed by a really brief interview with Asuka.
I didn't even, honestly, I saw a recap. I was just trying to look for the matches.
Yeah, I kind of did that too. It was one question and Asuka Morla, immediately following her match at TakeOver. And Asuka just said, "Did you not see what I just did out there?"
Yeah.
You know, more or less saying, "No one can beat me."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was it. Most of these interviews were really short, one question, one brief answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a recap of Eric Young versus Roderick Strong, and they had a Roderick Strong interview, which I thought he actually did a really good job.
I didn't really hear what he said, but I saw him and he seemed intense. So that's
he seemed intense and convincing, completely convincing.
Yeah. I wonder what the difference is. So I read on, I think I want to say Observer, because he was recapping NXT, Meltzer was. And he said that I guess Roderick Strong was in the same tryout as Kevin Owens.
Interesting.
Kevin Steen. And they said that he was far and away the best wrestler, but they didn't really see much in terms of, I would assume, character. He didn't elaborate.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't picked up at the time. I wonder what changed.
Eventually. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Let's see here. Then we had the Velvet Change. This is what made me sad about this. Because this was great. This was Patrick Clark in his fully formed Prince gimmick.
Yes.
And I have one concern, but I also have one sadness, is that we've lost that awesome theme song.
I know.
And the new one. And the funny thing is the new one is much more ambitious. You can tell it's probably CFOs or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
But the last one had such a catchy beat.
I know.
I wish they would have made that more ambitious.
I know.
Just expanded on that. This is number one, Patrick Clark looks like he wants to laugh every time he does the kiss face. Because he goes like this. Like he puckers up.
Yeah.
It's so great. God, it's so fantastic. Great. It's so great. He comes out all androgynous Prince guy. Remember 6 months ago, maybe it was a year ago, when WWE was saying, we're going to organically integrate LGBT characters into our programming. I hope this isn't that. I hope this isn't their way of doing that, because it's like the least subtle thing they can possibly do. On Twitter, he has been, because, you know, I think, you know, some wrestling fans are backwards, and I think they've given him shit about possibly being a homosexual character. And he has been very androgynous about it and being, you know, saying, I'm above sexuality and this and that. And I hope they stick with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you don't want this to be a caricature.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I like it so far, and I like how he's presented himself through social media, this character thus far. I think it can make for some really fun stuff, because he looks like he wants to crack up through the whole thing. He looks like he's legitimately having fun with this gimmick.
Yes.
And he is, and the great thing is, he is all in on it.
Yes.
That's the great thing. Talk about athletic, though. Talk about getting hype.
Yeah.
When he did his finish, which I think was like a...
It was just an elbow drop.
It was an elbow drop. But man, and because I remember I saw a picture on Twitter that NXT's Twitter account or WWE's Twitter account posted of him in the air. And it's ridiculously high up there.
Yes.
And so seeing it, like the actual video of it, was very impressive.
Yeah.
It was very cool. I think a strong debut for Velveteen Dream.
Definitely. I mean, we saw him as this character, Patrick Clark.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's been on TV a couple times.
Yeah, in kind of a developmental stage. Yeah,
and we saw him at the house show here in Sacramento.
It's kind of, they're piloting it out. They're focus grouping it, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this seems to be like, you know, he's got the proper name and he's got, you know, new music. This is going to be his, you know, his start.
Yes.
Which is awesome. He took on a local guy named Robert Anthony, who goes by a different name. I forgot what it is, but I read about this also.
Oh, okay.
He's a pretty popular Chicago wrestler. And I wasn't able to discern this, but the crowd was at one point chanting for him using his name that he used in Chicago. I forget what it is.
Okay.
But it was kind of cool to see that dude get some rub.
Yeah.
Anyways, Velveteen Dream picks up his a win.
In his debut.
Decisive win in his official NXT debut.
Yes.
Then we had, I didn't see the Pete Dunne interview.
Another really brief interview where it was one question and he just said, I think.
They look all mad.
Yeah.
It was
something about Tyler Bate achieving his dream or living out his dream, and now the belt belongs to him.
Yeah.
Short.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Bobby Roode's interview was real short. He's saying, now I won. I'm going to go take some time off, sit by my pool with my belt.
Did you see? I didn't see. I don't know if this was just on the YouTube, or was this actually a part of at the end of TakeOver? Cassius Ohno trying to calm down Hideo Itami in the locker room, and Hideo Itami was going crazy after his loss.
Oh, I didn't notice that at the end of TakeOver, no.
Okay, I didn't notice. Yeah, because the end was just Ciampa.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe this was on their YouTube or something like that. I thought they might have aired it here. Maybe we both just missed it if they did.
Yeah, could be.
Because this is not the kind of NXT where we're going to sit
here. Well, what happened in the video, the backstage locker room thing?
Oh, I don't know. I saw like little bits and pieces of it, or like I saw maybe some stills and I read about it. It's probably literally a minute long. I don't know why I just didn't seek it out. But he was very upset. Cassius Ohno tried to calm him down. Hideo Itami was having none of it. Maybe it's going to lead to a match with him. I have no idea. Let's see here. Then we had Drew McIntyre. Sorry, I almost threw up right there.
Yeah,
I had three eggs, toast, and an avocado. What's the thing going on right now about the avocado toast?
Oh, you've never had avocado toast before?
I mean, no. There's something happening with it right now.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I've heard two references of the dangers of avocado toast.
Oh, I've not heard that. I've always heard that avocados are very good for you.
I know, me too. The cost of avocado toast. Why avocado toast costs so much?
Oh, is it just a monetary money thing?
Oh, maybe. Over the past few years.
I know, avocados are expensive.
Anyways, we're going to do some research on that.
Yeah, we had fill me in later.
We had Drew McIntyre versus...
Wesley Blake.
Wesley Blake, that's right, because this was set up.
Wesley Blake was having a hard time keeping his pants up. Did you notice that?
I totally didn't. I did not notice
that. There
was
always about an inch to an inch and a half on the back of his pants that were hanging lower than they should have been.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Several times he's pulling them up.
Has he got quitters in there? Has he been cutting weight? What's going on with that? It's like spandex.
I think they were just new pants. Maybe, I don't know. I think they're just new. Maybe you know, they were tailored incorrectly or something.
Isn't
I don't know.
That something?
Or he didn't pull the drawstring tight enough. I don't know.
Isn't that something you take care of before you go out there?
Well, it's one of those things. Maybe they're brand new. He just put them on, hadn't wrestled in them, and realized once he was out there, he's like, oh, these aren't staying up very well.
Oh man.
Emergency. And I guess he didn't have any opportunity during the match to tighten the drawstring to keep up a little bit better.
Oh man.
But there was a couple times where he had to pull them up.
Might have seen Wesley Blake's.
A couple times you saw the top butt crack. The very top.
I'll have to go. Now I got to go back and watch.
Just the very top.
I got to go back and watch that now. Again. Because I did actually watch. I watched it. I guess I watched it half-assedly. I had to watch because we're doing. Okay, so here we go. We're doing Halloween Havoc 1992 for this weekend's Going In Raw.
Spin the wheel, make the deal. That's the gimmick for the main event.
There is so much weird going on in WCW. WCW is just, it's so weird. It's so weird. Anyways, another great brutal match from Drew McIntyre. God, he's such a man.
I know.
I aspire to be as manly
I know.
As that.
I know.
I don't think I can be.
I'm going to try, though.
Okay, how about this?
What?
Let's make a pact.
Okay.
You try to be Drew, and I'll try to be Aleister Black. Then we'll both be super cool.
Okay. See, I'm already in the process of growing my hair out long.
Check. Oh, don't do that. Don't do that.
I already have the beard. Oh. Check. I'm going to the gym.
You need to grow another, like, double your weight in muscle.
Well, I have to grow, like, 7 inches, too.
Yeah. How tall do you think he is?
I think he's 6'5 or 6'6.
Shinsuke's tall. When I saw you see him in the ring there, and I was like, oh, my God, he's tall. He's 6. You think he's 6'6 or 6'7?
That's what they bill him as.
Probably. He's huge.
Yeah, he's pretty tall.
That dude is massive. I think that's good to aspire to those levels, though.
I mean, I'll aspire to be, you know, Drew McIntyre scale down to 5'11".
Right. Yeah.
So he's probably, what, 240 something?
Yeah.
So maybe I'll try to get to 175 of muscle.
Up to 170? Gee, willikers. You're just a little baby boy.
About 162, 165 now.
You got to go get some pizza, man.
Well, no.
Yeah.
I need to go ingest a lot of protein.
Let's go get like a ton of chickens.
Okay.
Do like Regal style, chicken and milk.
Okay. I don't really like milk, but okay.
I love milk.
I know you do.
Anyways.
Another good match from Drew McIntyre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He wins again.
With, they call it the, oh crap, I actually knew it. I'm trying to learn more finish names.
It's essentially the same move that Roderick Strong had used in the past, which they call the sick kick. It's the same move. But it was referred to differently last night.
Yeah, it's the Claymore. The Claymore. Claymore. Claymore, of course, is it's like a mine.
Mm-hmm.
I know that from Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways. Kind of a lamer episode of...
Well, it was just a lighter episode.
Yeah.
There's a lot of recaps. An awesome debut. A couple fun matches.
Yeah. It was what it was. They do what they can do.
And they're having the TV tapings today, Thursday, right?
I believe so. Yeah, I think so. So we'll get lots of spoilers for that.
Tonight, I'm sure.
I'm sure we will. Let's see here. All right, we're going to answer some questions.
Answer some questions.
Man, I got to get to the P.O. box one of these days because I guarantee we have some stuff there.
Probably.
All right, here we go. Nemo, the Universal Kidney Punching Champion. He says, what was your first wrestling show and what do you remember the most about it? He says, wow. He says his was a house show in Savannah and he remembered that it was Benoit's last match. Interesting. That's a little slice of history to be there for.
I'm trying to remember if I went to a Nitro or a Raw first. Because I went to a Raw in Davis. It was after the Royal Rumble of '98, but before WrestleMania, because Stone Cold wasn't champion yet.
Mm.
I believe we had floor seats.
Oh, wow.
Maybe, I don't know, six rows back or something like that. The show ended with Stone Cold delivering a promo. He didn't have a match. I remember there was a segment because HBK, I think it was like the week after the Royal Rumble, after HBK hurt his back. And so he just showed up. DX just showed up on the Titantron. He didn't make the trip out to Davis.
Okay.
Ken Shamrock had a match. You know, and he's from the Sacramento area, so he got a huge pop.
Right.
So I think that was first, but then either shortly before or probably after, went to Nitro.
February 21st, 1998, when... February 23rd,
1998.
Is that Nitro? Steiner debuted his White Thunder
Was that
gimmick.
In Sacramento? Have you confirmed that?
Yeah. Yes.
So that must have been the second show.
Because we were there for we were there for that.
Man, that was only about 2 or 3 weeks after the Raw I went to then.
You were a fool for wrestling back then. Yeah. No, it was a lot of fun too. It was exciting. And then I went to a Raw, I think, at some point.
Here in town? We went to a bunch in LA.
That was in LA.
Yeah, we went to quite a few shows in LA. Went to at least a...
Yeah, no, you're right. That would have been LA because
at least
I remember
one Raw and one SmackDown.
That was a big mark for Y2J. Wisely. Let's see here. We have more questions.
The Discord Club Enforcer Heel Connor Dunmore. Hey, friendo, so I've recently realized that people have completely forgot about John Cena.
John Cena.
For SummerSlam, as it is one of the major four, he is probably a lock to return, so do you see Jinder facing him at SummerSlam? If not, who will Cena face at the biggest party of the summer?
Well, that's a good question. Let me ask you something. Do you think they have solid plans for Jinder at SummerSlam? I wonder how solid their plans are for anything at SummerSlam besides Rusev Shane, which is probably going to happen.
Well, that and then Lesnar-Strowman.
Lesnar-Strowman, right.
That seems a certainty.
You don't think that's going to be pending Strowman actually coming back? You don't think they're going to... I mean, that's probably penciled in.
Yeah.
Assuming nothing else happens with his elbow.
I think Shane and Rusev's penciled in too, but...
No, that's in pen.
Vince, no. That's nothing with Vince is in pen until 2 hours before
Vince
the show.
Vince doesn't use pens, dude.
No.
All pencils.
All pencil.
Yeah.
I'm sure Cena will be at the show, on the show. I'm sure he'll have a match.
What do you think he's going to be? The funny thing is I could totally see that being the case.
Oh, I could too.
But then how do you get out of Cena? I mean, it's wrestling. There's a million ways you can get out of Cena getting that title. Or you have Cena get the title. But I don't think that's going to happen.
No, because that would be his record-breaking
win.
If they're going to do that, it's probably going to be at a WrestleMania.
Yeah. It kind of all depends on how Cena thinks of Jinder Mahal, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe not at this point, though. I think he's so, like, doing the Hollywood thing. I don't think he really cares what he does. Like, look at this past year.
Yeah, I know.
You know? It's like, he wanted to wrestle Undertaker. He said that, and I believe him. Mm-hmm. And I believe that was the plan. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, you know, okay,
And then he was pitched the proposal idea, and I think he eventually just... Either he just went along with it or felt like he had to, and just did it. And it seemed like he was trying to have fun with it.
Yeah, but it seemed like he was trying to have fun with it, but also kind of checked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, let's see here.
Terrence Thompson, what visual aspects of 205 Live would you change? Purple was a terrible choice for the color scheme because it's dull and boring.
Mm-hmm.
He would rather change the color scheme to orange and white to make the show more vibrant. And he stopped changing the ropes during Raw and incorporate more of a Ring of Style. He says PWG production. All good ideas.
I'm not huge on the orange and white because it just makes me want like a creamsicle. And I don't associate that with cruiserweights.
Suggest an alternate.
Black and white. I was thinking about this very thing. Black and white would be fantastic. It'd be great. Because I know you and I differed on the Brooklyn Nets when they debuted their new logo. Oh, it was beautiful.
Oh, I don't like the logo. I don't like the font they used. It's the most boring font.
Oh, man. It's minimalist.
See, I'm cool with minimalist.
Yeah, that's what it was. But you're not.
No,
cool
it's
with it.
Boring.
Yeah.
There's a difference between minimalist and boring, and that was boring.
I am talking to the new design guru. I will I will stand corrected. What color scheme would you like to see for 205? Because he's right. He's right about that. I hate their color scheme, and I hate that little logo guy, that little mascot guy they have. What is his name?
I like the shade of orange they use because it's not 100% orange. It's kind of a red-orange.
Yeah, okay. All right.
So I think if they did orange and black, that would be cool.
Okay.
Or maybe black and white with... orange trim.
Well, I'm always a big fan of that. I'm always a big fan. I mean, you know, W Steve W is black and yellow.
Yeah.
So I like that, and I love orange. But, man, just give me black and white. Oh, man, the things you could do with that. Whenever NXT, when they go to Brooklyn and it's black and white, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It is beautiful.
But you'll notice they don't use the Nets font because it's a boring font.
Again, design guru, who am I to disagree? Tommy T has a question. He says, hey, Steve, and Commissioner of Fun, Larson. So wrestling is something that doesn't always age well. If you didn't see certain stories while they happened or watch while the characters grow, personally to me, I don't enjoy any of Hulk Hogan's work. And honestly, while I enjoy him, I think Stone Cold is a little bit overrated. Whoa, Tommy T. Anyways, that being said, what are some timeless storylines and characters from wrestling history? Timeless storyline, Stone Cold versus Vince McMahon. Hogan versus Andre.
I was going to say Hogan and Randy Savage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a great feud.
Storyline. Yeah, totally. Because that lasted a while.
Yeah.
The Rock and Sock Connection from their Genesis.
I'm going to add this. DIY.
Oh, great story.
Universal story.
Yes, absolutely. Between two men loving each other.
Steve's comfy shirt, Liam. Let me ask you this, Wagner.
Let me ask you this. Crap. Liam knows me, man.
Yeah, he does.
Liam knows me. Let me ask you this.
I know. You say that a lot. Hey, guys. Do you think Aleister Black should be a silent but deadly type character?
Like a fart?
Meaning his actions speak for him with very little to no promos, interviews. Liam feels this would add to his character and make him more intimidating to his opponents.
I'll say this, man. You know, you strip some of anybody's natural mystique away. Like, for example, and I knew this was going to happen with Shinsuke Nakamura. When he's chilling backstage with AJ in those flatly lit segments, and they're so stilted and awkward. They do what they can with them.
Yeah.
But they're so awkward. AJ says something. Nakamura says something. Back and forth. It kills some of the mystique there. And to insert Aleister Black, who is like at this point all mystique.
Yeah.
To put him there, it's going
to
kill a little
bit. This is
bit.
What I think they should do with him. Because at some point, they're going to have to develop his character a bit more for feuds. Instead of having him do promos or interviews. And I don't want it stylistically to be like what Bray Wyatt does, because I don't want him talking to camera.
Sure.
And I don't want it to be edited in the same fashion the Wyatt stuff is, because it's way too much.
Okie doke.
But you know, like those vignettes they were running for him prior to his debut, stuff like that that's narrated by him.
Yeah.
Develop his story, develop his character that way.
But can you go, let me ask you something. Let me ask you this. Can you, now nah, I'm self-conscious about it. Can you do that? Continuously. I'm thinking about Bray Wyatt right now because you bring up a good point. He's a great promo guy.
Yeah. I don't think you need to do it continuously. I think it's effective if you do it once a feud.
I really don't want to see him interacting with people backstage in the locker room. That seems like such an anti-Aleister Black thing, you know? And it's honestly, like, when's the last time you saw? I don't think I've ever seen Bray Wyatt backstage in the locker room. So
no, usually if
take a cue.
If he's in the arena, he's like
in the bowels of
the arena. Yeah,
take a cue from the Bray Wyatt stuff.
Yeah,
but Bray Wyatt's like an expert talker. I have no idea if Aleister Black can talk that way, but yeah, if he can't, if what comes out of his mouth isn't flipping Shakespearean, you know, then yeah, limit. I would say limit his talking. If you want to establish character, do it the way you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yes. Aaron Gleason. Hey, friendos. WWE asked you to put together a show of five matches pitting members of the main roster against members of 205 Live. What five matches do you book? This is what Aaron suggests. Seth Rollins versus Austin Aries. Good. AJ Styles versus Cedric Alexander. Shinsuke versus Neville. Braun Strowman versus Jack Gallagher.
Oh, I'd like that. That's good.
Samoa Joe versus Akira Tozawa.
I like those last two a lot, so I will steal those.
Okay.
I would say Neville versus Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Oh, he said that?
Yeah. His ideas are all really good.
AJ Styles. That's somebody better for AJ Styles. I would actually want to see AJ Styles versus Akira Tozawa. Because I've seen so much, I've seen enough of Akira Tozawa.
Yeah, and I'm sure we've seen AJ Styles versus Austin Aries before in TNA. I'm sure that's happened.
I've probably seen that a lot.
Maybe in Ring of Honor, too.
Yeah, probably. Seth Rollins versus Austin Aries.
That'd be good.
Give me Kevin Owens versus Austin Aries. That'd be fun.
Probably seen that before, too, in Ring of Honor.
Probably have. Austin Aries is in Ring of Honor?
Yeah.
Before Impact?
Yeah. He was the champion.
You hear in the Observer that Impact is trying to get Adam Cole.
Good luck.
I can't wait, man. I'm watching this Thursday, you fat bastard.
All right, every week on the dirt sheet until Adam Cole signs, we should have a power rankings of promotions that can sign Adam Cole.
Yes, I love it. Let's do that. Let's do that.
Here, I'm going to make...
Put it in the notes.
Yeah, I'm going to put it in the notes.
I'll read a question. This is a good question. Chris Kimmel. Do you think Breezango can be the next big comedy duo like Edge and Christian, where they eventually give them their own TV show on the network? Do you think Breezango? Do you think Edge and Christian a realistic ceiling for them? That's a huge ceiling. Like, if you follow through their careers, that's a massive ceiling.
It'd be a pretty awesome ceiling.
Edge and Christian were already kind of established as... Here's the thing. I was thinking about this because somebody mentioned Mankind, thinking of Mankind as a comedy
act.
Oh,
I saw that.
And, okay, but here's the interesting thing, though. When I was looking up Mankind, for some reason, it was it's probably just Wikipedia, but who knows where they got it from. I forget. Maybe it was Meltzer because he was talking about Breezango, maybe. Anyways, whatever this was said, that after Hell in a Cell, WWF felt that the audience still wasn't really connecting with him. And it wasn't until they decided to go comedy with him that they figured him to be a draw based on the audience reaction.
Yeah.
So... was he a comedy act? No, I would not consider him that because everybody knew that this guy was legit from day one. They all knew.
Yes.
And you need that first before you do the comedy stuff.
Yes.
With Breezango, they weren't high profile enough to have that backstory where they were serious first. They came out the gate as a comedy act, and that's why the Santino comparison is a bit more apt.
Yes,
that's why I don't think Edge and Christian really are that good of a comparison.
Because they didn't start as a comedy act. No. Right.
They were just like normal guys who everybody realized were hilarious, and they ran with that. But then they obviously went back to being... did they ever? I'm sure they did. Edge and Christian ever have like a proper, like, long drawn out feud?
I don't recall.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hamza Hilal.
Probably. Everybody's lighting up our comments right now. Of course they did. They fought at WrestleMania in the main event.
Do you think a Ty Dillinger demotion to NXT would actually be smart?
No. Look, he's there. That's it. He's there.
Yeah.
It's this or be released.
Yes.
No way.
They just need to actually start using him on SmackDown.
Yeah. Larson on a pole match. Says 205 Live is almost always on par, if not surpassing NXT in terms of quality matches and storylines. However, more people would rather watch NXT instead of 205 Live. Why do you think this is? And do you think if 205 Live had a takeover type special every couple months that it would help get more viewers?
It's mostly the crowd.
It's mostly, God, I'd even say I think the branding is too close to... it feels like it honestly, it just feels like a main event. It doesn't have its own identity. That's kind of the problem. It doesn't have its own identity. Like that, the 205 Live branding is too slick. This should be PWG, but with like slightly higher production values. I was reading the thing because we were thinking of doing an ECW pay-per-view for our review thing. And, you know, I was reading a thing about, you know, the top 15 reasons why ECW failed, why the reboot failed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one of the things was production value. They said the production value is way too high.
Yeah.
Like the great thing about ECW, and this I totally agreed with, was staying up late on a Friday night at 3 o'clock in the morning, catching it on the Spanish channel.
Yeah.
You know, and that's totally true. They said if they brought the production value down, that would have helped.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But that was one of 15 very valid points they were making.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Oh, okay. Chris, the Muffin Man Johnson, been a patron a few months, but this is my first question. He said, if the WWE had Cien Almas start an LIJ de NXT faction, who would you have in it? Chris Johnson would want Adewa Tommy, Oni Lorcan, and Ruby Riott. Ooh, that's a good lineup right there. I kind of like that lineup.
Well, I don't think Hideo Itami is going to be in NXT for much longer.
True, but he is now.
Yeah. Oney Lorcan's good.
Oney Lorcan. You can plug Oney Lorcan anywhere.
Yeah. I kind of feel like Ruby Riott.
She needs to be on her own yes. as a face. She's totally, like, I think they have high hopes for her.
Yes.
I'm trying to look at the females in developmental, at the women in development, and sort of, because there's some that I really like. Put Sarah Bridges, Crazy Mary Dobson in there. I wonder what their plans are for her.
I don't know.
Put her there. And then two other men besides Cian Almas.
Well, Lorcan.
Yeah, and then one more guy. Strong powerhouse, Cassie Sono. No. Who would be their evil? Oni Lorcan could be their Sonata. Almas is their Naito. Who's their evil? The Velveteen Dream. I don't know.
I don't know either. Paul Iannotta. Who from NXT do you think will be in the women's tournament? Also, the way you pronounce my name is Iannotta.
Iannotta. Iannotta. Ooh, he swerved us there. I was worried if it was Iannotta or Iannotta. It's Iannotta.
Iannotta.
Nice.
Who from NXT will be in the women's tournament? Won't be any of the competitors who are on TV a lot.
Yeah, no, I don't want to see any. I don't even want to see like Lacey Evans in that thing.
No, I think it'll be, you know, you mentioned Crazy Mary Dobson.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Candice LeRae was in. I think Battle Royale. Yeah.
She issued a statement about Johnny Gargano's injury.
Oh yeah.
But like kayfabe wise.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay, so there's my new line on kayfabe. By the way, a post takeover picture of them doing that.
Oh, yeah.
That's my new line.
Well, you see that Ciampa posted a thing on Twitter.
Moving out of the house.
Yeah.
You think he's actually moving out of the house?
No, I think that was, like, them being roommates was kayfabe.
Oh!
I think okay. That was storyline.
All right. Yeah, that would make sense.
That was my understanding because Johnny Gargano was married to
of course.
Candice LeRae. Not to say that married couples don't have roommates.
Yeah,
but,
sure. Yeah. They're doing well enough. They don't have to do that. Yeah.
Candice LeRae.
That's
like a
hilarious.
But like Rachel Ellering, would be surprised if she's in it. She's been on NXT for a time.
Yeah.
Kimberly. She's had one or two matches on NXT television. Wouldn't be surprised if she's
so
in it.
So people who haven't... So like when you're in NXT, you're sort of like, once you come out of developmental and you're ready for TV, they bring you out for a little while they figure out your character.
Yeah, they test some things out.
And then they kind of re-debut you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As we saw with Patrick Clark.
Exactly, yeah. We saw him do his Prince thing a little bit here and there, but then now he's fully formed Velveteen Dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just did something similar with Sonya Deville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. She was Daria Baronetta, which I think is her real name.
Yeah, and she was involved in the Billy Kay Peyton Royce storyline
for a very short period of time.
And then she was off TV for a month and then re-debuted
and then,
as
boom,
Sonya Deville.
Yeah. One last question here from Finske Balamura. New patron here. You think sometime in the future we'll see Finn Balor reunite with the club? And if so, what do you think will be the best scenario? I still say I am all on board with the club. With Heyman as their lead guy.
Okay.
I want to see Heyman turn on Brock Lesnar using Finn Balor and the club. It will never happen. That will never happen.
Nope.
That'd be pretty rad, though.
It'd be interesting.
They would be heel for like a second, and then people would just be cheering
the living
crap out of it.
How cool it is. Because
right.
It's pretty cool.
Well, just like you were going to be when you're Drew Mac Larson Tyre.
Yeah.
And I'm... Alice Steve Black.
There you go.
All right. Anyways, that's it for now. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.